Well, most of us have woken up to the news this morning that the actor Robin Williams has been found dead in an apparent suicide. He was 63 years of age. The American actor and comedian, best known for films like Mrs. Doubtfire and Good Morning Vietnam, had been battling severe depression. Williams has also talked and even joked in the past about his struggles with alcohol and drugs. In a statement, Williams' wife, Susan Schneider, said she was utterly heartbroken and on behalf of his family said it is our hope the focus will not be on his death but on the countless moments of joy and laughter he gave to millions. So here are some of his best moments on TV and film.
Nano, Nano.
Hawk calling Orson. Come in, Orson.
Mark calling Orson. Come in, Orson. Mark calling Orson. Come in, Orson.
Orson to Mark, am I coming in loud and clear?
Oh, too loud, too clear.
You're coming in fuzzy. What's the matter with your head?
Oh, I'm sending fuzzy. I think I got a little observed last night.
You're supposed to be observing the planet, not running around getting orc face.
Good morning, Vietnam! Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early. Speaking of early...
A yelp is a loud cry or yell. Now, Todd, I would like you to give us a demonstration of a barbaric yelp. Come on, you can't yelp sitting down. Let's go. Come on, up. Gotta get in yawping stance.
A yawp.
No, not just a yawp. A barbaric yawp.
Yawp.
Come on, louder.
Yawp.
Oh, that's a mouse. Come on, louder.
Yawp.
Oh, good God, boy, yell like a man.
There it is.
First the money, now this. Oh, that's so sweet. Oh, you fabulous guy.
Don't hug me in public again,
oh,
okay?
Oh, men with men. Oh, Jack, I love this guy.
In your cam. You got some punch. Yahoo and house. All you gotta do is rub that lamp. And I'll say, Mr. Lobster, what will your pleasure be?
Let me take your order. Jot it down.
You ain't never had a friend like me.
I take sugar in my tea.
Oh, your tea. Oh, tea is me right there in your tea. Give me that dear sugar. One look for two, dear.
Two, please.
Tea, sugar, hot water. You've got all of these. Come in right your way, dear. Be right there with your tea.
When I ask you about love, probably quote me a sonnet. But you've never looked at a woman and been totally vulnerable. Known someone that could level you with her eyes. Feeling like God put an angel on earth just for you. Rescue you from the depths of hell, and you wouldn't know what it's like to be her angel, to have that love for her be there forever through anything.
That's just some of what Robin Williams has done. The TV and film critic Toby Earle is with us this morning. Good morning to you, Toby.
Good morning, Stephen.
I dare say, as people hear this sad news, what lots of us will be doing of that particular generation will be remembering how he made us laugh during our childhood. Like, I, you know, I'll never forget Mork and Mindy and laughing about that as a kid.
Oh, I'd hope that's what people remember. Like, not for like his widow has said, I hope people remember the incredible volume of laughs that he has generated over the years. I mean, I think to kind of actually understand the genius of the man, and he was a bona fide comedy genius, is, I mean, the last time he got an electric shock, that is the speed of his comic synapses. I mean, he was so quick, so fast, and so relentless. I mean, the guy was a dervish, and every time he was on stage or even was just talking, it became a performance. He just couldn't but not launch into something off the cuff and so deeply spontaneous. And something there that you picked out in particular, his vocal performance as the genie in Aladdin. I mean, that is something else in terms of performance. That is unreal. The animators must have had an absolutely shocking time trying to capture everything he did, because he was just operating at 1,000 miles an hour. But yeah, I mean, all the way from Mork and Mindy, which was a bit part originally on Happy Days, which became a hugely successful sitcom all the way through to winning an Oscar for Good Will Hunting. I mean, the guy showed a great breadth and depth of performance.
And we're just hearing today, you know, it pales into insignificance given what has happened to him. But we're hearing today all of these stars from the world of showbiz from around the world paying tributes to him.
I mean, because they fully appreciate just what a titan this guy was. I mean, he came out of that period of American comedy, which also saw the likes of Bill Murray and John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd, a real sort of vintage class performer and caliber, and he went from stand up, where of course he was incredibly successful, all the way through to dominating Hollywood with huge films, Mrs. Doubtfire there, and then more serious pieces, you would say, things like Awakenings, where he played Dr. Oliver Sacks. The amount of roles that he took across his career, I don't think you probably would have guessed the first time, a couple of times you probably saw him do stand-up, and certainly the difference in roles as well.
Toby, thank you very much indeed. Robin Williams battled drug and alcohol addiction for many years. He had recently been in rehab for treatment. 4 years ago, he spoke to Jonathan Ross about binging on drugs in his early days.
There was one time that someone gave me, they gave me two Black Beauties, which is like, for those of you who don't know what those are, the two speed pills. And I took them and I went, oh, sure, because in those days, yeah, whatever, fine, let's do it. 3 days later, I was kind of like, oh, why am I in Bombay? No, I was still going. And then the weird thing is you're up and you're up and you're up, but when you crash, yeah. Even the devil's going, dude, this is not going to go well.
Well, Dr. Roman Kapoor is in the studio with us this morning. Dr. Kapoor is a clinical psychologist. I guess for those of us who are not trained as you are, we'll be thinking, well, here's a man that on the outside was so happy and so confident.
Mm-hmm. Well, for Mrs. Doubtfire, nobody doubted his sanity. And unfortunately, people who make a lot of noise, particularly in this kind of media world or entertainment world, carry around an awful lot of despair. And he actually managed to convince everybody that his despair was nowhere. I mean, his internal world, how he thought about himself, was probably a horror movie. And I think he struggled for years and years with very distressing and very depressing thoughts and feelings, and the way to manage it was to overcompensate for it. And everything he did do, of course, it was terrific, it was brilliant, he was a genius, but all the time he was carrying these very, very disturbing feelings.
And, well, he battled it and he was battling his demons, mm-hmm. but how difficult is it to get through?
Well, he
depression, severe depression.
Well, it's very difficult to get through it. I mean, what his way of getting through it was to be active. His way to get through it was to get the limelight. I mean, he got an Oscar, but he got an Oscar for covering over how he really felt. Now, that's what a lot of people do. I mean, in manic depression, it's quite common that people will go to the opposite of how they really feel. But you can be sure, absolutely sure, that if somebody is manic or somebody is overexcited, that is actually inversely proportional or opposite to how they really feel. But they're trying to get away from the despairing feelings that they're carrying with them all the time. And unfortunately, if they're not taken seriously and recognised, then the person feels that this is the only way to manage them.
You know, it's almost a cliche, isn't it, to talk about the tears of a clown?
It is. And actually, it's extremely common in Hollywood. You know, it's extremely common in the entertainment world that a lot of people will struggle with their depression. And in many ways, the limelight and the Hollywood life is like an antidepressant. But quietly and privately, people will struggle with these feelings. And I think it's very important that people know that just because it looks super good on the outside doesn't mean it's super good on the inside. In fact, as I said earlier, it can be a bit like a horror movie. And people are using these high-octane situations to deal with how they really feel.
And I guess for those people who are completely ignorant about mental health, they will, and I'm sure this annoys you and others in this field, they will say, well, what had he got to worry about? He had all the money in the world and he could do whatever he wanted. Mm-hmm. Well, what's he got to be down about?
His mind was in bits. His mind was shattered. He was coping with enormous despair. I have no doubt about that. And his way of coping with it was this kind of overexcited state of mind. And nobody caught on to it, because why would you? Why would you doubt, as I said earlier, his state of mind? But particularly with a manic depressive state of mind, it's very, very convincing. And people will collude with it. And of course, people like it, particularly, you know, if it's comedy or it's this kind of, as you said earlier, the kind of funny man, people like it. But always keep in mind, when you're with a funny man or somebody that's over the top, they could be hiding a deep despair, which I think we have to take seriously. Because I think if we take it seriously, then people might know that they're actually in trouble.
And it affects people in all walks of life.
It affects
severe
people.
Depression, doesn't it? Whether they're rich or poor, whether they're famous or not, whether they're a big achiever. In fact, often people who are big achievers.
Well, often if there is a kind of feeling of depression, some people have called it a feeling of deadness that somebody's carrying around. As I said earlier, they will go to the opposite to hide that. So the last thing you would think in the world is this person is coping with bad feelings, because they're doing the opposite of what they're really carrying around with them in their own mind.
There will be people listening this morning, Roman, who may feel that they are in a similar situation. I guess they might be thinking to themselves, is there an escape from severe depression? Is there a release?
Well,
before we get to that, sorry, how does it actually work in the brain, depression? What happens?
Well,
is it a chemical imbalance? What happens?
I mean, there's a lot of controversy in the field, but there's no doubt that there is a chemical imbalance. I mean, that has been kind of proven. But the very depressed feelings, the feelings of deep despair trigger the chemicals that basically fluctuate in the brain when somebody is depressed. Now, my view would be that the cause of the chemical imbalance would be the despair that somebody carries around. But it is a very deep despair. And people can be carrying this around from as long as they can remember. And they've developed all sorts of coping mechanisms to manage it, as Robbie Williams did. And that's
Robin
fine.
Williams.
Robin Williams did, sorry. And that's fine. But I suppose my message would be, is don't be fooled. You know, be careful. If you're around somebody like that, All you have to say to that person, all you have to do is notice that maybe things aren't as good as they make it out to be. Just a recognition of how they really might be feeling.
What do you do about it?
Well, I mean, the talking therapies now are being provided through the health service. I mean, certainly for manic depression, if that's what he suffered from, there are a lot of drug treatments that are helpful. And I think it's a combination of drug treatments and talking therapies that's the most helpful.
And talking therapies is sitting down with someone like yourself and talking. It sounds simplistic.
It sounds simplistic, but it's a very complex piece of work, particularly in my style of work, to get to the deeper feelings that are causing the depression, because it is a deadness. It is a despair, and it is a horror movie. And the patient doesn't want to put words to that. Who would want to put words to that? But if you do put words to it, and the patient feels that they're being understood, then there can be some easement and some relief, rather than this overcompensating manic activity.
Why, though? Why, if someone will listen, does it help?
Because there's a feeling of being recognised. There's a feeling of being understood. There's a feeling that another person can come into contact with those very disturbing feelings and stay there and listen and help the person move on. Because if you're struggling with these feelings, you can't get out of it by yourself. You know, it's a bit of a prison. So if somebody feels that somebody else can make that depth of contact, then there can be an open door and a way out. But to do that, the other person has to take, as I say, very seriously that the person who's appearing super okay actually isn't okay.
What are resources like in Northern Ireland?
Well, recently the government have invested a lot of money in a psychological therapy strategy. So to be fair to the government, they have listened, and the Department of Health is rolling out a strategy that is developing all sorts of talking therapies, from cognitive behaviour therapy to counselling to psychotherapy, which is my own particular field. So there is a provision being established here. It's in its infancy, but it is certainly being developed here.
And is it like, Roman, is it like alcoholism in that once you've got it, you're prone to get it again?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's an underlying feeling. It is an underlying state of mind that people carry around with them, and they manage all ways of coping with it, whether it's addiction, whether, as I say, it's kind of manic behaviour. And it kind of goes in ups and downs, and people will cope with it in different ways. Obviously, for him, it became too much. You know, he could not find another way to cope with his inner despair, and he only found one way to manage it, and that was to take his own life. But, you know, if people recognise it and see the real story, then I think there's a chance that some of the people will feel understood.
And what do you say to someone this morning who is contemplating taking their own life, contemplating the same thing?
Find somebody that you feel you can trust. Think very carefully, because if you open your mind to somebody who lets you down, that is even worse at times. And if you can find that person, then put words to how you feel, you think and feel. And that could be an opportunity for a way out of this awful, awful despair.
And seek help. Seek professional help.
Seek professional help. Yeah, seek professional help. But I think in seeking professional help, you know, still think about how you go and see. You know, I mean, I think it's a very important... Often first impressions are very important. But, you know, do try your best to put words to the awful feelings that are disturbing you.
And there is hope.
There is hope. There is hope. Yeah, there is hope. And there are other ways of managing this. But for there to be hope, I think two things have to happen. The person themselves have to take seriously how they feel. And then they have to find somebody else who takes seriously how they feel. And ideally, that's a professional with expertise in this field.
OK, Dr. Kapoor, thank you very much indeed.